Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back. Episode number 139 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
All right. So some more big news. Exciting stuff that we're seeing. The SEC gave BNY Mellon a green light to custody crypto assets, right? Which is the opposite of what they've said with SAB 121. So apparently, if you're a big bank and the SEC wants you to succeed, they'll make exceptions to the rule.
It's strange how that works. It's everybody tries to get Bitcoin ETFs and nobody makes any progress. And then BlackRock says they want in, and within 6 months, it's approved. It's just, it was always going to work this way. It always has worked this way. It just, it's funny to watch it happen in real time. And it's funny for on my side, I'm like, okay, I'm not ticked off. I'm not, you know, it's like, you know, this is how it's going to work. They're going to give somebody a head start. And then 6 months from now, everybody else can jump into, and BNY Mellon gets to win because they know the right people and padded the right pockets. And that's the way the world works.
Yeah. I think Congress sent something to the SEC saying, why don't you just repeal it? This is stupid. But I think after the election, their plan is probably to bring it up for a vote again. At this point, I don't think any votes actually happen until after the election, because I think Congress is done until then.
Oh, man, no way. Even in a year without an election, it's basically the holiday season. They're not doing any work.
Yeah. So speaking of the election, that we've talked about some of the crypto packs, and Fairshake is one of those. So I think there's been a huge amount of money spent on some of these races, and one of them is the one up in Ohio with the current head of the Senate Banking Committee, Sherrod Brown. So I think they're spending a ton of money on Bernie Moreno's account. There's like $40 million that's gone towards this, which is humongous at that point. And I think Fairshake started doing this about a month ago, and back a month ago, maybe the early August, there was like a 39.6 to 48.3% vote, with Brown getting the 48.3. It is now 51 to 49, Brown's at 49. So there's definitely a lot more people that are paying attention. We'll see what actually happens with polling, because who knows about polling and how accurate they really are.
Yeah, the politics of this, it makes me think like, okay, the Senate Banking Committee, well, when Cynthia Lummis and Tim Scott were at the Bitcoin conference, Cynthia Lummis alluded to Tim Scott being the next chair of the Senate Banking Committee if the elections go their way. So it's funny to watch politic and, oh, you know what, let's just take out the Senate Banking Committee because things are coming our way. We want this to happen. Let's put some money on this side. And oh, by the way, Ohio seems to be coming around on crypto and Bitcoin in general. They introduced a bill to allow citizens to pay taxes in Bitcoin last week. So maybe they're just kind of seeing the tide change a little bit and are getting ahead of it. But it's I don't think it's a coincidence that that's twice in 3 months that the Senate Banking Committee has come up in connection to Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, it's funny. The senator from Ohio is against crypto, yet Ohio is accepting crypto.
It's just a matter of time, man.
So, speaking of a matter of time, we've been waiting for Harris to actually say something about crypto, and she finally did. She ended up getting a B rating with Stand with Crypto, because mm-hmm. she pretty much said two sentences, and in that sentence, there was the word blockchain. So it talked about where we'll invest in biomanufacturing and aerospace, remain dominant in AI and quantum computing, blockchain and other emerging technologies, expand our lead in clean energy, innovation, and manufacturing, and a few other things as well, right? But that meant that she got a B grade in her view on crypto. And I think crypto Twitter went crazy about that. And all of a sudden, it went from a B back to a NA. Because she hasn't really released anything other than saying blockchain at some point. So where it stands now, you have both Democrats with an NA and both Republicans with an A rating. So we're still kind of back to where we were at the beginning of all this, where Republicans are talking about crypto and Democrats still really aren't talking much about it at all.
And it's funny that that happened, because so what happened to me, I had a text ask me what each candidate meant for Bitcoin or whatever. And I, you know, I'm like, well, Bitcoin's going to be fine either way. I think things go a little faster if the red team wins, and they go a little slower and differently if the blue team wins, because they're going to kind of be anti-Bitcoin or at least kind of neutral, but they're going to print money. And so that's kind of a good thing. And then on the red side, there it looks like they're going to help kind of pave the way for faster adoption through, you know, some kind of regulation, that's at least some regulatory clarity. And so I was like, so I Googled Stand With Crypto to see what the positions were. And I was like, I don't know why Kamala has a B here, because she's been against everything until she said really like a couple sentences that were basically saying we're not going to block innovation in broad terms. And she, and so I was like, I'm not sure why she has a better grade here than Biden does. This doesn't make sense to me. But you know, Trump's an A, she's a B, but I don't know why she's a B. So it's funny that they went back and changed it. And the only time I've ever looked at that list, I happened to be in that window where they gave her a B for doing absolutely nothing, to be clear, and just saying something that wasn't like derogatory towards the industry. So I'm on board with her grade being an NA, because she's done very little or nothing, and she said very little or nothing. It would be hard for me to grade her outside of just allowing all the actions of everyone else on her side to be anti-crypto. So that's it's funny that I just happened to peek in that during that window where she got a B, and I'm like, this can't be right.
Yeah, she does have a kind of a big crypto guy in Mark Cuban that has come out and said if she gets elected, he would be interested in becoming the new SEC chair, which I don't know if that's real or not. He said he really is, but yeah, that's it's interesting with what's happening there, Tim.
I liked Mark Cuban on Shark Tank, and I have not liked him in any other way. Like, listening to him talk about crypto, it's like, it seems like he's just firing from the hip, and he doesn't, I don't know. I'm not a big Mark Cuban guy. I'm not an anti-Mark Cuban guy, but some of the stuff he said, I think a lot of it just feels like the blue team is packing celebrities onto their side. And he's one of them that can that they put on that team. I don't see how he's Treasury Secretary type material, but you know, whatever. That's politics, and I don't really get my feathers ruffled about it anymore.
Yeah. So speaking of the SEC, we talked about last week that there was going to be all five commissioners getting grilled by Congress, and Gary Gensler and Hester Pierce were two of those. That I think it was like a 4-hour session before the House Financial Services Committee. And a couple of interesting things came out of that. One of the Republicans, Warren Davidson, asked Gensler about Choke Point 2.0, Operation Choke Point 2.0. And he kind of smiled and he said he's never heard of that term, with a smile on his face. And it's like, really? So that was one thing that happened that was kind of crazy. They also asked Hester Pierce whose fault it was for the SEC's crypto hostile agenda. And she only gave one name, and she said the agenda is the chairman's agenda. It's right in front of him, right? So she hasn't really had the opportunity to talk about him right in front of him. So that was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, I saw a couple of little clips and highlights and stuff. Those hearings are tough to watch because each person gets like 5 minutes to make their sound bites for YouTube videos and things like that. But I will probably find a time to, like, when I'm driving for a long distance by myself, to just put that on at 1.5x speed and mow through it, because as crappy as it is, there's probably 5 or 10 combined minutes in there that's actually pretty interesting, and you just have to wade through all the crap. A lot of times the things that I find interesting are not, don't make the highlight clips, because they're not like incendiary political crap. They're actual, when they actually talk about kind of the nuts and bolts of things. So I'll go through and listen to it and see if I can pull some stuff for next week. It's just, it's rough, man. It's like reading a technical manual. It's something I hate doing, but I know it's kind of good for my brain to take in stuff, but I got to sit down and make myself do it.
I did see one of the things where Gary Gensler came out and said, as it relates to Bitcoin, my predecessor and I have said, that's not a security. And I was like, really? Have you ever said that?
So, I did see that. But I mean, that's, I have gotten so comfortable with Bitcoin not being a security that that to me is old news.
Yeah.
You know, it's the IRS has treated it as as property for a long time. So I'm not, that's not surprising. He's listening to him talk. He's kind of a real sarcastic kind of like, I don't like listening to him talk very much. Like a lot of these guys, I don't really care for what they say, but I can listen to him talk without getting irritated. But he's kind of an irritating person to listen to.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the SEC, we said they'd be very active at the end of September, since that was their fiscal close. They did settle both with Mango Markets and with TrueCoin. Mango Markets raised $70 million from a sale of their Mango token. And they're settling with the SEC for about $700,000 in civil penalties without admitting or denying that they did anything wrong, but they do have to destroy all their Mango tokens. The TrueCoin did a true USD stablecoin, and they're kind of saying the same thing. It was unregistered sales of investment contracts, so they're settling for about $700,000 there too. So once again, they're making money, but these guys aren't admitting any fault. They're just getting this whole regulation. Yeah.
So I mean, if you can't raise $700,000 to start a business, you can't start a business. So these are just little. These aren't victories for the SEC. They're not. It feels like something that someone who's not good at their job puts on their resume. You know what I'm saying? Where you can kind of make yourself look like you performed when you didn't.
They're going to say they collected all this money, but nothing really happened. Nothing changed. Nothing's clear. So
look at all of my accomplishments. What was the net result? Nothing.
We do actually have the Tornado Cash issue going to trial now. So that's been proceeded to jury trial. That was the two founders that were indicted back in what, August of 23, something like that. I think they were charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering, conspiracy to commit sanctions violations, and conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business. So a lot of what they've been talking about is they wrote code and it's free speech. And since the users kind of control their assets the entire time, there's no fees that are charged. So this protocol can't really be a financial institution, but the judge denied it. Now it's going to trial. We'll see what the people say, but I think it was planned to be in like early December for the trial, but with discovery and the amount of crap that everybody has to go look at, it's probably going to be pushed back until 2025.
Yeah, I'm curious to how the courts deal with this, because it's really technical, but it definitely bumps into like freedom of speech, like code is speech kind of problems. And so if they say, no, this code is not speech, then they're going to have to draw a line somewhere, or a blog is not speech. You know what I mean? Like at some point the code is speech. And if they say it's not, they've got to figure out where that boundary is. And then good luck defending that boundary over time in other cases. So this is kind of an interesting one to watch. They move so slow that paying attention to them kind of sucks. So I'm happy to just sit back and whenever there's a big announcement, listen to it. But that was kind of a surprising take from the judge, and that kind of flips what a lot of crypto people have been relying on as far as code being speech and the defense of crypto legal terms. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I would think that this one probably would go up to Supreme Court eventually.
So speaking of legal things, Coinbase just hired an ex-SEC advisor to become their VP of litigation. So they think that they are getting some, I guess, inside track from someone that knows what's going on. And this guy is leaving the SEC and going to a large company to kind of fight against the SEC, right? So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, that's the right way to hire people if you're Coinbase. Yeah. Like, that's what everybody else does. That's what the banking industry does. And so that's how you get things done.
And no shocker, but the SEC has postponed their decision on the ability to list and trade options on BlackRock's Trust ETF. So I was expected to have some sort of finality by September, end of September. decision's been delayed until early November. My guess is they'll still find a way to push it back further because they don't want to deal with it until after the election, and probably the next SEC chair will probably have to deal with this anyways.
Kick the can. Like, that's the strategy more often than not. So that's fine.
What I did see that was interesting is with rates coming down, they're expecting that Ethereum staking returns could exceed the U.S. interest rates in the coming year, which could really help out Ethereum if that really happens. So to be determined, and that's probably 9+ months away at this point, but that's kind of an interesting thing to pay attention to.
Yeah, the interest rate coming down has a lot of impact. And basically you got a ton of money, and I can't even remember what it is, in money in like overnight money market accounts that are making 5%, because a lot of older people are happy to make 5% and not have a lot of risk and be fairly liquid, so they could move it out if they had to. So I want to say it was like between $5 and $7 trillion sitting in money market accounts making 5% on due to the high Fed funds rate. And as they drop that rate, they're going to squeeze the juice out of that money market, as people are like, well, that was fine when it was at 5%, but now I'm at 3.75%, and I'm going to put it into stocks, or I'm going to put it somewhere. And I feel like every time there's a liquidity event and people sell their stocks and they sell whatever they've got to get into US dollars, when they reallocate those funds, some of them get put into Bitcoin and the Bitcoin price goes up. And so as they wring out the cash that's sitting in these money market accounts, some of it's going to get allocated to Bitcoin. And I didn't really think about Ethereum and staking, because I just, for people that are older that are just looking at investments and not younger people that are trying to scramble to beat inflation in the long term, you know, the people that are happy to get 5% but aren't happy to get 3.75%. Ethereum seems like a stretch, but Bitcoin seems like it's pretty close, especially if the financial advisor starts to talk about Bitcoin favorably in the ETFs. So I anticipated that money coming in, and some of it that wasn't exposed to Bitcoin before is going to find its way into Bitcoin as these rates come down. So the rates coming down and quantitative easing is going to be very good for crypto. Like, yeah. Another way that it's good, right?
Yeah, I think the big thing is in the U.S., the ETFs for Ethereum, you can't stake them, right? So those companies aren't allowed. So the BitMEX CEO just came out and said the U.S. crypto market is going to be taking a different path from the rest of the world. And you're going to see kind of U.S. companies focusing on domestic customers, and then the rest of the world is going to stay out of the U.S. just because of the lack of clarity regulation. So his view is that, I mean, Asia is definitely going to take over some of that. And if India is smart, they will be the one that in the next 10 years are going to kind of rule crypto from an Asian perspective. So I'm questioning that just because India is struggling to figure out what to do with crypto, and they've been bouncing back and forth, but they're a huge company and they're a huge country, and they used to have some smart people. So we'll see if that does actually happen. From that end.
In that same line of thinking, I was listening to Scott Melker's podcast, or one of his things that he talks about. He was in an Asian conference over the last week or two, and he was saying it's totally different over here. No one's talking about regulation. No one's talking about the SEC and Gary Gensler. Nobody cares about the election in the United States. They're just building things on crypto and blockchain, and they're doing what the United States crypto industry was doing, or felt like it was doing, 7 years ago and 5 years ago, where they're just innovating and finding these teams to build different things and solve different problems. And that's, let's talk about why I'm bullish about crypto and Bitcoin. It's because if one country slows things down, everybody else just keeps moving forward. And the global nature of Bitcoin and crypto is part of the immune system that makes it an organism that just can't die. So they can slow it down in different spots, but there's always going to be a jurisdiction where they're going to support it.
Yeah, And what's interesting too is China just came out with some pretty positive news towards crypto. Their ex-minister of finance kind of came out and said crypto has some negative impacts and we must fully recognize the risk and harm it poses to capital markets. But he did say we also must study the latest international changes and policy adjustments as it is a critical aspect of the digital economy development. So they've changed some of their monetary and fiscal policies that, I mean, they're dropping their 50 basis points to boost lending over there. Yeah. They're dropping their mortgage rates. Right. So they're doing all this and realizing that they need to pay attention to crypto. So, I mean, that could be huge. Right.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of people in the United States think about Bitcoin as like this thing for wealthy people to get more wealthy. But it's really just that's just because we're the United States and that's kind of where things end up. But it works for everybody. Like it creates jobs for people because they can come up with stuff to add value by solving problems. It can add an element of freedom where you can take your wealth with you and move it around from country to country. And I mean, there's so many different benefits and different angles to this. And I think a lot of people find out about Bitcoin because the number goes up and then they stop learning. And there's just a lot to it. So to me, if you're not paying enough attention to understand that, like getting to there is probably a good spot on your research is to understand just the breadth and depth of Bitcoin and crypto. You know, if you don't get there, then you just look at charts.
Yeah. Well, so the other interesting news that I saw was Israel, right? And Israel just came out with a new initiative to get rid of their $200 shekel bill from circulation. So they're getting rid of cash because they're blaming it on financial crimes and black money in the Arab society, which for them in Israel, I think it's like 1.6 million citizens, which is about 17% of the country's population. So this is very similar to what India did back in like 2016. That was a complete debacle. But their goal is to get rid of cash and move to digital dollars of some sort, right? So, which we've talked about, the whole CDBC is very scary and Bitcoin is a way to kind of opt out of that as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. They are planning to use AI and limit the amount of cash transactions that people have. And it's kind of scary that this is happening, but I mean, we kind of knew that it was going to be coming at some point too. Everybody's been looking into it.
Yeah. We'll see how this thing goes. And the good news seems so permanent.
Yeah. Well, they did say that they have seen other countries do similar things like this, and they blame China. Or said China has been one that's tried to ban cash completely. Although China or somebody from China pretty much came out and said, actually, China's not that way. China's central bank will actually makes it illegal to not accept cash as a payment option. So they're not cashless. So I don't know where Israel is coming up with their news and where they're getting all this, but it's probably not the best thing to have. To see happen.
Governments don't need the truth to justify what their actions are. They can just make stuff up and run with it, and then eventually everybody hears it so often that it becomes true. It's pretty crappy.
Yeah. So a couple other world news. Turkey kind of announced that they are not planning on adding some additional taxes to stocks and crypto, which is great to hear, at least as of now. And Japan is reviewing its rules for the crypto sector to make sure that it's offering the right protection for investors, and possibly it could end up lowering taxes for digital assets, which is something the country's been kind of exploring for a little while. And they have kind of a mess over there where for a while you're having to pay on unrealized gains on crypto, which was not ideal.
Yeah, Turkey's kind of ahead of the United States in the timeline because of their inflation. So it's kind of forcing them to figure some things out. So it's kind of interesting to watch them.
We talked about Bhutan last week and I saw another stat on them. Right now, they are mining between 55 and 75 Bitcoin every week. It's 3.6 million to 4.9 million a week that they're mining, which is insane.
Yeah, that's getting it done for a country that nobody had paid attention to at all until a month ago.
And I think they're partnering with Bitdeer to get some of this, the money for this, and they're using hydropower to do a lot of this, which is clean and cheap. So good for them. It'll be interesting to see if they become a much stronger country moving forward. Bitthumb is a South Korean exchange that they talked about on their shareholders meeting on Monday that they're pursuing listing on the U.S. NASDAQ exchange. So I think also in the South Korean exchange, but they are the second largest crypto exchange in South Korea, although they're probably what, a third or a quarter of the largest over there. But that's interesting that they're debating on whether it makes sense to get listed on NASDAQ.
Interesting.
All right. So Bitcoin is looking, I think it closed like up 9% in September, which is usually a down month. There's only been like two up months ever in September. So October has only had two down months ever in Bitcoin's history. So we're hopefully going to see continued more growth. But one of the crazy parts that I was looking at it is, and we talked about MicroStrategy buying 7,000 Bitcoin last week. ETFs bought about 7,000 Bitcoin in a day last week. And in every day, there's only about 450 Bitcoin mined. So there is a huge difference in what's happening and what's about to happen. So the supply shock is going to probably be really real pretty soon.
Yeah, and I saw that BlackRock pushed Coinbase to settle on the main chain within 12 hours after they close, so that they could tighten up that. There was a bit of a rumor that there was a lot of paper Bitcoin being created with the ETFs and Coinbase. So they're trying to seal that up, which is not a bad thing. You know, like these ETFs are going to happen. Better do it now, because all of the stuff that we talk about leads to price escalation. And I mean, all the way down at, this is the time where I start to get a little bit more, you know, outspoken about Bitcoin. I bought a truck. I don't have a truck, and I just like having a truck. I got a house maintained and some real estate and things like that. So I wanted a beater truck, so I got this truck. And I was like, yeah, I can pay cash, or if you're into Bitcoin, I can pay in Bitcoin. He's like, cash is fine. I'm like, okay. I really want this guy to look at the Bitcoin price in a couple of months and be like, oh, crap, I could have gotten double what I was asking for that truck. And so, you know, stuff like that is kind of like passive aggressively orange pilling strangers by just letting them know they could have had X dollars in Bitcoin. And I mean, I don't know what he's going to do with those dollars, right? But it's probably not going to be better than what Bitcoin's going to do. And along the same lines, man, I was listening. So there's a podcast called Bigger Pockets. And it's the podcast I listened to that got me into real estate and started letting me understand what the metrics are on a successful real estate deal. And it's how I kind of started buying rental properties. And it's like sound money adjacent, right? Because you're leveraging the US dollars to buy real property that cash flows. So it's not buying gold, and it's not buying Bitcoin, but it is getting off of the US dollars and understanding that you need to invest them, and leveraging against the depreciating dollar is solid, because 10 years from now your mortgage stays the same but the rents go up. And so they had an episode, I don't listen to it much anymore, but I had an episode that was titled What to Invest in When Not Buying Real Estate. And I'm like, oh, okay, this will be interesting to listen to. And they brought up crypto and they brought up Bitcoin, and some people just didn't say anything. And this, but one lady said, I'm currently 0% into crypto, and that's probably won't change. I don't understand it, and I don't want to do the research. And I was like, well, at least that's honest. I mean, she's got, you know, her career is based on real estate. She's not going to look outside of it. There were three other people. They sounded like younger guys. And I'm like, oh, these guys just don't want to admit it on on this podcast. But because they talked about how much their net worth was in, and they all had these gaps in that didn't sum up to 100 where crypto could have fit in. But they wouldn't say it. And so I'm like, man, this is the kind of stuff that, like, oh, yeah. Not everybody's into this stuff. Like, there's so many people that are just clueless to it and don't want to spend the time to get into it. So I thought that was just kind of a reality check on where we are, that these people are professional investors that do their whole company is based on real estate investing, and they have blinders on to Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's wild. Well, I know you're trying to get out of here soon, so I got a handful of more things to run through. Do you want to jump off, or do you want to stay on for a few more minutes?
Yeah, I'll jump off and let you talk about crypto stuff, and then that way I won't just say, okay, and that's interesting when you're done talking about it. All right, Jason, man, I appreciate it, buddy.
All right, see you. A few other things that are pretty interesting here. One of the Bitcoin miners, Bitdeer, is planning to launch a next-generation state-of-the-art chip with TSMC that will have a power efficiency ratio that's kind of lower than what everybody else has seen for a while. They're planning to mass produce that starting November, and then also working on their next version of it, the CeLo3. Tigran, which is the U.S. citizen being held by Nigeria, the U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee did pass a legislative measure demanding the Nigerian government to release him because of his health conditions. That was passed House Resolution 1348, although it was just done via a voice vote, and nothing can happen officially on the House floor until Congress gets back after the elections. So not sure if they're actually going to do anything with that or not. Bases Total Value Locked, which is Coinbase's layer 2 Ethereum, they just ended up getting over $2 billion of TVL, which is up from about $430 million at the start of the year. So almost around a 370% growth year to date, which is crazy. So they're continuing to just be one of the bigger side chains out there for Ethereum. Visa just announced that they are going to enable a platform or development platform for fiat-backed tokens. So they're calling it Visa Tokenized Asset Platform, VTAP, and it will be powered by smart contracts, and it will help digitize and automate existing processes that will then power kind of the exchange of real-world assets. So we've been talking about RWAs for a while, and now Visa is enabling companies to tokenize their RWAs and provide somewhat near real-time settlement using some sort of token. So I think there's a Spanish bank, BBVA, that's going to pilot this early in 2025. So it'll be intriguing to see what happens there. MicroStrategy, we've talked about their stock before. There is another company that just announced a 2x long on MicroStrategy, which is bigger than the 1.75x long. So the 2x long is MSTU from T-Rex. TX was the one that is 1.75x long. It went live on August 15th, and it's raised about $857 million, which is 6 weeks or so. In the first week of the 2x long, they took in $72 million. So it is still a lot of demand for MicroStrategy, and they're still not even officially on the S&P 500. What I did see also is there's a ton of hacks that have happened in the past, but you're starting to see that go down. So crypto still lost about $413 million in Q3 due to hacks and fraud. What's interesting is a majority of that is like 99.3% of that is hacks. So most of that is on major exchanges like Wazir and BingX. They were exploited for $235 million and $52 million between the two of them. So that's a majority of, that's like 80% of that amount that was lost. So make sure you're keeping your money in some sort of cold wallet that can't be hacked. There is still some frauds going and scams and stuff like that and rug pulls that are happening, but that is definitely minor compared to the hacks piece. Speaking of hacks, OpenAI had one of their Twitter accounts compromised to promote a fake crypto. I think it's the fourth time that ChatGPT has had this happen. So once again, if you see something anywhere, you probably need to check it in multiple places to make sure it's real before you get scammed from that perspective. Binance also had a post on a dark forum that claimed that they had leaked the personal data of 12.8 million Binance users. It was supposed to include like names, email, phone, birthdays, addresses, yada, yada, yada. Binance has kind of come out and said that's a hoax. So they still have not had any issues there. We've talked about SBF a lot. His ex-girlfriend and the CEO of Almeida Research, Caroline Ellison, was finally sentenced. She was sentenced to 2 years in prison for defrauding investors of crypto. I think the judge said that he has seen a lot of people help in different trials, and he has never seen anyone like her, the amount that she pretty much flipped on SBF and provided help. So kind of interesting. We talked about the Saga phone and Solana having the next generation phone, the Seeker. Well, now there is an entertainment-focused Ethereum Layer 3 network called X Protocol that is releasing the Android-powered smartphone that is going to be optimized for gaming. It's called X Forge, and it's being billed as the world's first DPIN phone, decentralized physical infrastructure. It's going to use the Layer 3 network for earning rewards and participating in airdrops. It's priced at $299, which is crazy considering it has 256 gigs of storage and 12 gigs of RAM. It'll have a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 processor. They also said it will be X Protocol, which is a Layer 3 network, is built on top of Base. We just talked about how successful Base was. So that's kind of exciting to see, and will be intriguing to hear how successful they are competing with the Solana phones out there. And then some other kind of good news, CZ, the ex-CEO of Binance, was just released last week, a little early, a couple days early. And Robinhood is now deciding on whether or not they're going to do their own stablecoin. So there's a lot of really cool things happening. As usual, crypto hasn't really stopped. It's continuing to go. Still a lot of questions around regulation, and especially with the elections going on in the U.S. Outside the U.S., there's a ton of stuff happening, and everybody's moving forward as fast as they can to kind of get that space in this, to get that foothold in this crypto space as fast as they can. So thanks for joining. We'll talk again next week.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.